Plenty of UFC goodness infecting our lives the last couple of days. Of course, we're just coming off of the high that was UFC 80. And tonight, Spike TV presents Ultimate Fight Night 12, headlined by Mike Quickswick, going up against Josh Berkman. So here to make sense of all the UFC news, rumors, and fights is MMAmania.com's Jesse Holland. Jesse, what's going on?
Not too much. How you doing?
I'm doing great. And let me first just say MMA Mania, one of my favorite sites for getting all my info on the UFC and, of course, mixed martial arts, everything going on in that world. So great job to you guys, and very excited to be talking with you today.
Thank you. Feelings likewise.
So like I mentioned, UFC 80 just a couple of days ago. Obviously, BJ Penn defeating Joe Stevenson, and we're getting into Ultimate Fight Night 12. But first, let's talk about UFC 80. Your thoughts now, a couple of days after BJ Penn's big victory and then going into the obvious battle against Sean Sherk.
Well, I think it was important for BJ to follow up the win he had over Jens Pulver not too long ago, because, you know, we've all known for the longest time what it's meant to BJ to be the best ever. But, you know, critics of BJ will tell you that it's not enough to just have the talent. You've got to have the wins also. And I think that's something that's been lacking from BJ in his past five or six fights, is he has the talent, but he didn't have the wins. And now we're starting to see what everybody thought he was capable of, and that's being the most dominant fighter in the sport.
Obviously.
He fought against Pulver. He absolutely destroyed Joe Stevenson. And let's, you know, let's call it like it is. Joe Stevenson's not a can. He's got 35 fights going into the BJ Penn fight. He had some ridiculous winning streak aside from Josh Neer. Stevenson was the real deal, and we saw how easily he was dismantled. And I think what's driving BJ at this point, he wants that rematch with St. Pierre. But in order to do, he's got to get through Sherk first.
So now, okay, we have Sherk and BJ. It looks like it's going to go down May 24th. Whichever UFC that is, 85, 84, not quite clear at this point. What do you think about that matchup? Because, you know, as everyone knows, Sherk is coming off of the suspension, and by the time that fight goes down, and with everything going on in his life, it'll almost be a year from his last fight. That was in July at the UFC 73 Stacked. So how do you view, you know, Sherk going up against Penn? Penn clearly not wanting to stay at lightweight for the rest of his career, but now on this sort of mission, and then obviously Sherk having something to prove coming off of the suspension.
Well, I think knowing the type of personality that Sean Sherk is, I don't think the layoff is going to affect him at all. It's not going to affect his training. Here's a guy who can do five rounds in his sleep, and he's going to be angry. He's going to be angry over the suspension. He's going to be angry over the situation at lightweight. And most of all, he's going to be angry of all the crap that BJ Penn's been talking since he went out. And I think it's going to be a great fight, but there's a caution here, because if you look at the fight with BJ and Joe Stevenson, after the fight, when BJ was talking and giving his thoughts on the fight and calling out Sherk, he could barely keep himself up. And I have to wonder, you know, despite all his training and despite all his success as a lightweight, is cardio still a factor with BJ? Because if it is, he's going to be in big trouble against Sherk.
What do you think about Sherk getting the first crack at BJ following the suspension? Do you feel as though a fighter, once he's, you know, reprimanded for taking any kind of performance-enhancing drug, whether or not he knew about it or, you know, was in one of his supplements or whatnot, do you think that he should be getting that first crack or have to sort of climb back up the ladder?
Ordinarily, I would say he'd have to climb back up the ladder, but really, who wants to see Sean Sherk fight anybody else but BJ Penn at this point? I think the fans want it. Dana wants it, and I think it's one of those things that we're just going to sweep under the carpet. No one's going to say otherwise, and we're just going to get it on. And you know what? Normally, I'm very critical in this situation, but I'm okay with it this time.
Speaking of being critical, what were your thoughts on the way the UFC, in particularly Mike Goldberg, Joe Rogan, and obviously, you know, they have producers and they have Dana telling them, you know, what subjects to touch on and what not to, but when they didn't bring up the fact that, you know, here he was suspended once Sherk entered the broadcast booth before the main event, and they kind of, like you said, swept it under the rug. They've done this before with the Couture situation. They even sort of did it with John McCarthy recently. What are your thoughts on that? Because to me, that's just poor journalism on their part. And obviously, they're not journalists, but I mean, it just seems sort of like you're trying to hide something by not bringing it up, as opposed to just being up front and saying, okay, listen, this is the situation. Because if the NFL, the NBA ever did something like that, everyone would be on their back.
Right. Unfortunately, I think that's, you know, that's modus operandi of not only Dana, but the UFC in general. And I don't think that's ever going to change. And as much as I like Goldberg and Rogan, I think they're a great team, a very entertaining. They're marionettes. All that's missing are the strings. And unfortunately, they have to regurgitate whatever it is the UFC, and Dana in particular, wants them to say. They do have boundaries, and we can't expect them to cross those boundaries because, you know, that's not what their job is. Their job is to call the fights, provide analysis, and, you know, keep things always on a pro-UFC spin. That's their job.
All right, so the other big news coming out of UFC 80, obviously, Fabricio Werdum, big victory over Gabriel Gonzaga. For a moment, it seemed as though Gonzaga would get back into the win column following the Randy Couture loss, but now Werdum, following that lackluster loss to Andrei Arlovsky last year, is now seemingly the number one contender for whoever wins that interim belt between Nogueira and Tim Sylvia at UFC 81. What are your thoughts on A, Verdum's performance against Gonzaga, and B, getting the number one contender spot after just one win in the UFC?
Well, I think he's got number one contender spot because we've kind of run out of options in the UFC heavyweight division. We're kind of back to where we were about 2 years ago. You know, we were down and then we were up and now we're back down again. And I think as far as his fight with Gonzaga is concerned, it's just one of those situations when one fighter has the number of another fighter. Gonzaga is a great fighter. He's tough. He's big. He can grapple. But he's starting to look like a one-hit wonder. He has the head kick over Krokop. He hasn't been able to do much since then. And, you know, Werdum, he's talented. What he lacks, I think, is the killer instinct. We saw that against Arlovsky. And what happens from here, if he's going to go up against Nog, who he's already lost to in Pride, if he's going to go up against Sylvia, you know, he's going to have to do a lot better.
Has the Kendall Grove era in the UFC officially ended?
I'm afraid so. And it's a shame, too, because he looked like he was going to be the next great thing. He just absolutely dismantled Alan Belcher. Since then, I don't know what's happened. I think he came into the Rivera fight still thinking about the knockout from his last fight, and that came into play, absolutely. And Rivera took advantage of it and put him away.
All right, finally on the UFC 80 front, Marcus Davis, another big victory for him. And your site in particular was sort of lobbying for Davis to step in for the injured Akihiro Gono and fight John Fitch. Now, most recently, you guys have said that John Fitch will be going up against Chris Wilson, which is definitely an interesting bout. Wilson, a guy maybe a lot of the casual UFC fans might not have heard of, but he's on a roll, the veteran of the IFL and Bodog fight. That said, your thoughts on Davis? I mean, he clearly now has to step up in terms of the competition that he's faced. Do you believe that he can actually really be a real player? I mean, here's a guy that's calling out Takanori Gomi, and, you know, 2 years ago, a year ago, you would never expect him to be at this type of position in the 170-pound division.
Boy, what a difference a year makes, especially with Marcus Davis. I don't know if he's ready to start calling out people like Gomi, but I'll tell you what, when I saw him on The Ultimate Fighter 2, I just thought here was a guy, he knows how to strike, but he has no business being in the octagon. He was tooled by Joe Stevenson, and out of nowhere, he's put together this win streak, and not only just put together a win streak, he looked impressive doing it, and he's looked like a true mixed martial artist. He's doing everything. He's got the cardio. We know he can hit hard. He's pulling out submissions. I mean, this guy is ready to take on some real competition. I want to see it. I really wanted to see him go against Fitch and see what he's made of. You know, Fitch has a new opponent, but, you know, Davis has to get in there with somebody who's credible.
All right, so this is one of those great weeks in the UFC and for MMA fans where there's a pay-per-view and then an Ultimate Fight Night tonight on Spike TV, 9 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific as well. Headlined by Mike Swick going up against Josh Berkman. Of course, the last time we saw Mike Swick losing that tough bout in his hometown of Houston, Texas to Yushin Okami, UFC 67. Now he's dropped down to 170 and battling Josh Berkman, who is also coming off a loss to Caro Parisian. What do you think of the matchup of especially Swick coming down to 170 and going up against a guy like Berkman?
I was a little upset to see Swick drop down to 170 because I think Swick had all the tools at 185. I'm a huge Swick fan. I'm all over the bandwagon. I thought he had Okami in the second round at UFC 69. Okami was rocked, couldn't put him away, and I think that loss kind of made Swick realize that, you know, he might not be strong enough or big enough to compete in 185. I disagree. The way he handled David Loizzo at UFC 63, he was all over Joe Riggs. Aside from the loss to Lieben back in 2004, I mean, Swick's been unstoppable. I think he got rattled by the loss to Okami. I'm sorry to see him drop down because 170 is a very crowded division. You got a lot of talent in there. And if he thinks Okami was strong, then he's in for a big surprise when he gets up against GSP.
So that said, going up against a guy like Berkman, you think that this will still continue the trend? Was the Yushin Okami fight just a sort of speed bump in his road to success, whether it's in 170 or 185, and you know he'll get back on the winning ways tonight?
Oh, he's definitely back on the winning ways. He's going to put it to Berkman all three rounds. Definitely swept by a unanimous decision, dominant performance.
All right, so we'll hold you to that. The other fight that I'm looking forward to, for obvious reasons that we share the same hometown, Patrick Cote, the Montreal boy, going up against Drew McFedries. This one, definitely an interesting one, simply because, I mean, Cote coming off that big victory over Kendall Grove when Grove was actually considered, you know, a force at 185, and, you know, Cote was seemingly on his last legs before that bout, and now compiled two wins in a row and going up against McFedries. What are you thinking about Cote? He's got that Montreal fight looming in the background. Do you think that he can string together another big victory before April 19th?
I certainly hope so, because the Cote we saw before those wins is not the kind of fighter we want to see in the UFC. You can't sleepwalk your way through these fights. You've got to come and bring it, and especially against a guy like McFedries who can really bang. The only problem with McFedries is he gets in there and sometimes he just looks like he's asleep at the wheel, aside from his striking. So this has the potential to be a quick knockout, or it can be a very ugly fight, which we've seen in the past.
Yeah, McFedries, in all three of his fights in the UFC, two of them wins, one of them a loss. None of them have gone past the first round, so this one should be interesting no matter what. All right, there's plenty of great cards, plenty of great fights, excuse me, on this card. You've also got Nate Diaz against Alvin Robinson, and it's always interesting to see a former winner of Tough. I mean, Nate has had a fight under his belt since winning that competition, but now, you know, he's getting into the groove of his UFC career and going up against a veteran like Alvin Robinson. What are you expecting from Diaz, you know, as he tries to climb the 155 ladder?
I expect from Diaz the same thing we've seen since he debuted on The Ultimate Fighter. We're going to see a lot of great striking and a lot of great submissions. I mean, it's interesting when you look at Nate Diaz, he's kind of like the forgotten son of The Ultimate Fighter. You look at seasons past and the popularity of guys like Forrest Griffin and Joe Stevenson, even Keith Jardine to a lesser degree, and you kind of think about Nate Diaz. I don't know if he's just because of the weight class or because of the season, but he needs to get out there and he needs to make some noise and ride that momentum.
One of the interesting bouts that, you know, it's kind of buried there on the, you know, on the marquee, but, and it probably won't get televised, but it's Corey Hill going up against Joe Veers. And, you know, Corey, we all know about him getting into the Tough show and sort of lying about his career. On UFC.com, it says that he's 1-0. Whether or not that's true or not at this point, I guess we'll find out if he really is 1-0, if they announce that on the show. But, you know, Veers is coming off a tough loss to Gray Maynard, where he lost in 9 seconds. Do you foresee Corey sort of living up to that hype where he's this big lanky guy fighting in 155, made it to the show, a lot of expectations hung on him, or will he get exposed later tonight?
Well, I don't think it's a coincidence that Corey Hill, with his experience or lack thereof, is going to face Joe Veras. I think this is you know, the kind of match that they plan on, because they want to build up Corey Hill. He has the look, you know, he has the backstory. You know, and now he's got to perform, and, you know, giving him Joe Veras is exactly, you know, this is the kind of thing that was planned from day one, absolutely.
All right, any other fights on that card that you're looking forward to? I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. Gray Maynard will be fighting Cole Miller, you know, Matt Wyman, another, you know, it's littered with former Tough Five guys, it appears, but is there one in particular that we should look out for?
I would look out for Cole Miller. I mean, he gets a lot of heat for his look, he gets a lot of heat for his post-fight emotions, but here's a guy that can fight. He's talented. He's got great submissions. He can go the distance. I'm also interested to see what happens with Gray Maynard, especially after his last fight. You know, has he evolved? I mean, that's really what the question is when you look at Ultimate Fight Night 12. You've got Wyman and Maynard and Miller. Are these guys evolving? Corey Hill, has he taken the next step? I think it's going to answer a lot of questions about the future of these guys.
All right, Jesse, now that we got you on the line, I want to talk to you about some other news making the rounds in the UFC. One in particular that very interesting is Andrei Arlovsky finally getting back into action, and it seems as though it's going to happen against Jake O'Brien, guy we spoke to just a couple of weeks ago at Jarry Park. This is an interesting one, obviously, because we haven't seen Arlovsky in the octagon since that lackluster performance against Fabricio Werdum, and Jake O'Brien has been injured for well over a year following the victory over Heath Herring. What do you make of the whole Arlovsky situation? Do you foresee this one going down, sort of like Brandon Vera, where at the 11th hour he ends up staying in the UFC, or do you think this will be his last fight for the company?
Well, to call Arlovsky fighting Jake O'Brien back in action, I don't know if that's the right way to phrase that. Jake O'Brien, I have nothing personal against him, hasn't shown me anything. And Andrei Arlovsky, let's be honest, he deserves a lot better. Again, not a knock against O'Brien, but he shouldn't be fighting O'Brien. He should be fighting a top-tier heavyweight. You have Chet Congo on the card, who's coming over an impressive victory over Krokop. These two should be mixing it up. Even Arlovsky-Herring I could be okay with, but not Jake O'Brien. And it's kind of a crime what's happened to Arlovsky. And I've been critical of Arlovsky of the past. His fight against Werdum, we've seen him sleepwalk his way through the fight with Sylvia. You know, here's a guy who's loaded with talent. He's got the look. He's got the skills. But I don't think the UFC knows what to do with him. And I don't think they know how to kind of nurture Arlovsky into that role. He kind of fell off the pedestal a little bit there, but he could easily get back up there. Who wouldn't want to see Arlovsky versus Nogueira? I mean, there's so many different things you could be doing with this guy. You know, slowly working Krokop back up there. Arlovsky-Krokop would be a shootout. I'm really disappointed to see him fighting Jake O'Brien. And not only that, I'm very disappointed to see the way he's been handled by the UFC, where he's just kind of been, you know, left out to sea.
So that said, do you think that this will be his last fight for the UFC?
With the UFC, it's impossible to tell. It really is impossible. I mean, so many things go down in the UFC in back alleys right before the show starts. I mean, it's crazy how they do business. So, like you said, there could be an 11th hour signing. It could just be all talk. Who knows? But if I was Dana and I was the UFC, I'd be real concerned about seeing somebody like Arlovsky, who's got drawing power. Here's a guy who can sell pay-per-views. Do you really want him ending up in M1 to fight Fedor, or Elite XC to fight their new crop of heavyweights? I don't think so.
You know, you mentioned Mirko Krokop, and there's some doubt as to, you know, what the future holds for him within the UFC. He clearly wants to continue his MMA career despite the appearance on the Hustle show on New Year's Eve. And at the post-fight press conference for UFC 80, Dana White seemed, he was, you know, as he always is, or sometimes is, very nondescript about what the future holds for Krokop. What's your take on the Krokop situation? I mean, obviously, we're probably going to see him back in the UFC at least one more time, you know, despite the big contract and everything. I don't think they're going to drop him at this point. But do you think that those two fights were maybe just sort of, again, bumps in the road for his career? Or is this really the end of the Mirko Krokop that we knew just a few years ago?
I really hope it isn't the end. It's hard to say. Coming off the Gonzaga KO and then the follow-up with such a lackluster performance against Congo. I mean, here's a guy who's a devastating K1-level striker, and they just kind of get manhandled by Congo. And that's not a knock against Congo. He's a great fighter. But, you know, I have Krokop on such a higher level, especially after his performance at the Openweight Grand Prix in 2006. I mean, here's a guy on that night could have beaten anybody in the world. And to just see him kind of floundering in the ranks of heavyweight. And I think that has a lot to do with Krokop's attitude. I mean, Krokop came to the UFC with the expectation that every fight was going to be like the Eddie Sanchez fight, that everybody was going to be running in the other direction, and he was just going to maul his way to the top. It hasn't happened that way. And I think, you know, not only does the UFC have buyer's remorse because they're stuck with a guy now they paid a ton of money for, and he hasn't performed, and Krokop feels like he's disappointed. He doesn't want to be there. You know, I can't speak for him personally, but, you know, this is the vibe that I'm getting every time I see him in anything that's UFC related. Is it the end of Krokop? I certainly hope not.
Finally, Jesse, before we let you go, wanted to get your thoughts on a figure, especially on the internet. Everyone loves to talk about Evan Tanner, and now it seems as though we're finally going to get to see him back in the octagon after almost 2 years away from it. His last fight, UFC 59. A victory over Justin Levens, and it seems as though now he will be fighting at the Montreal card against Yushin Okami. A tough test for a guy who will be away from the octagon for 2 years, and forget about all the other stuff that he's had to deal with outside of the ring. What are your thoughts on Tanner coming back to the UFC and, you know, again, talk about, you know, trying to relive glory of the past. Do you think that he can capture that magic of yesteryear?
Well, he's certainly jumping into the pool hip deep, no doubt about that. I mean, he's going to come back and face a monster like Okami, who is just ruthless. Tanner's not in his 20s; he's in his 30s, and you know that kind of layoff. I don't know. I wouldn't bet against Okami in that fight.
So you think that this is kind of a mistake on his part to take such a tough fight, his first one after 2 years off?
I don't know about mistake because it certainly puts him, you know, back into the limelight, and I think that's exactly what he needs because he could come back and he could fight on the undercard or he could fight somebody who's an up-and-comer and lose, and we'll never see him again. But if he comes in and if he shows up against Okami, if he puts in a kind of fight that we're used to seeing from Evan Tanner, that gritty, you know, tough-it-out fight, then, you know, he still has a future in the UFC, even if he loses. But if he, you know, he comes in and he loses to a lesser opponent. So I don't think this was necessarily a bad move on his part. He's back against a recognizable name. He's back in the limelight. And now all he has to do is hold up his end of the bargain, and that's perform.
All right, the website is MMAmania.com for all the news and rumors around the UFC and MMA. Definitely check it out, one of the best. And I'm sure that's no news to anyone checking out Jerry Park tonight. Spike TV, 9 p.m. Mike Swick, Josh Berkman, Patrick Cote, Drew McFedries, a bunch of other fights that we spoke of. Jesse, great talking to you. Continued success on the site, and you know, keep doing what you're doing over there. We love it.
Thank you. It was my pleasure. And if I could just send my prayers out to Sean Bias, who's clinging to life in a hospital after what went down with him not too long ago. We're all pulling for him in MMA Mania.
Yeah, why don't you give us some insight on that? You know, I don't mean to get back into the interview, but definitely the most important story going down and fresh off of the Sammy Vasquez death. You know, for those that don't know about the situation, can you, you know, share some light and where everything stands right now?
Sean Bias was a former Palace Fighting Championship featherweight, and apparently he went to a party somewhere in his hometown. Somehow got mixed up in some business that he shouldn't have been mixed up with as far as being at the wrong party, wrong people. Anyway, police were called to the scene. As the story goes, Sean took off. Police captured him. His friend George Adkins is alleging that the police had tasered him up to 5 times and repeatedly struck him with batons. So he is in the hospital right now. He's already suffered a heart attack. He's already had complete kidney failure. And, you know, here's a 22-year-old fighter that's, you know, had the future in front of him, and now he has a 30% chance of living. So I'm hearing through the grapevine that he has been speaking and he is somewhat alert. So hopefully that's a good sign, but still our prayers go out to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Everyone's prayers, you know, MMA or not, you never like to see a situation like that. Such a young kid and just a horrible story, you know, sports world or not, absolutely horrible. Well, on that note, hate to end it on such a sour note, but Jesse, again, great stuff with the site, and thanks for dropping some knowledge on us for Ultimate Fight Night 12, UFC 80, and all the other big news and rumors going down in the UFC.
That's my pleasure. We'll see you next time.